Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
The T-Biz podcast delivers T-news that you need to know. A recap of the week's major headlines with commentary and cultural trends hosted by Dan Bolton. It is the voice of origin for tea professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
Tea nourishes and inspires. It is an ancient plant-based medicine that simultaneously heals and energizes the body as it soothes the mind. Making fine tea is a blend of artistry and craftsmanship. The $200 billion tea trade is fundamentally local, yet exerts global influence, employing millions to enhance the well-being of all. Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. Lipton Tea and Infusions sells its East Africa tea gardens to Brown's Investments in Sri Lanka. Kenyan tea growers are swamped by incessant long rains, and enhanced enforcement of sanctions is hampering the tea trade. Plus, in memoriam, Dr. Francis T.P. Zee, 1954 to 2024. 25 years ago, specialty tea was grown on fewer than 5 acres on the Big Island of Hawaii, a remnant of the thousands of acres cultivated on large estates that flourished at the turn of the century. Today, Hawaii produces more specialty tea than any state in the U.S., thanks to an enterprising U.S. Department of Agriculture researcher and horticulturalist, Dr. Francis Zee. Zee, who was 70, passed away on March 29th in Honolulu, Hawaii. He will be remembered Saturday at a memorial service attended by a close-knit cadre of tea growers, inspired by his dedication and patient guidance. Joining us today is Tea in a Hawaii Company grower and founding member of the Hawaii Tea Society, Eva Lee, one of the more than 100 hobbyists and commercial growers inspired by Zee. In this segment, she pays tribute to the soft-spoken but direct-speaking Zee, a black belt kendo martial artist born in Hong Kong. In 2001, Zee explained in the Honolulu Star Bulletin how cultivating specialty tea could transform the local tea industry. Quote, "This is just the beginning," he said. "I believe many times these things start in the backyard. It has to become a hobby first," he said, highlighting the potential for growth and expansion of the local tea industry. More in a minute, but first, this important message.
What makes a perfect cup of Ceylon tea? The perfect cup is from the tea businesses that ensure the protection of all the children living within their tea estates. We salute Keilani Valley, Talawakili, Bogawanthalawa, Harana, and Eliptia Tea Estates. Support Save the Children, Sri Lanka.
The strategic acquisition of Lipton Tea and Infusions owned tea gardens in Kenya, Rwanda, and Tanzania propels Brown's Investments to the elite league of global tea producers. The acquisition significantly boosts the production primarily of black tea to 87 million kilos annually. Brown's will add to its 49 Sri Lanka tea garden portfolio 11 Kenyan tea plantations, 8 tea factories in western Kenya, and 100% of Lipton's Rwanda and Tanzania tea plantations and factories. Brown's Sri Lankan estates produce 43 million kilos of tea annually and span 40,000 hectares. The total acreage under tea will be nearly 89,000 hectares, or about 220,000 acres. Terms of the sale and purchase agreement were not disclosed. Brown's will become Lipton's largest supplier. The company agreed to adopt quality standards and social and environmental protections by 2025. The new standards address tea quality, human rights, climate change mitigation, and nature protection across all of their estates worldwide. In May 2023, Browns acquired 9 tea farms in Karako and Bomé, owned by James Finley Kenya. The 10,300-hectare parcel includes 5,200 hectares under tea. The parties assigned 15% of shares of the lead Kenyan operating company to a community welfare trust. This trust is designed to directly benefit workers residing in Karako and Bomé counties, ensuring an annual dividend. While the exact details of the transaction were not disclosed, a joint press release revealed that an initial endowment of 1 billion shillings will be transferred to the trust. Lipton CEO Nathalie Roos announced, quote, "Today we are unlocking major investments in East Africa's tea region and raising standards for how those wonderful tea leaves are grown and harvested," end quote. Roos said that proceeds from the long-term partnership with Brown's Investments will fund progress in farmer training and climate change mitigation initiatives. Kamantha Amarak-Sekera, who's the chief executive of Brown's Investments, expressed his anticipation for the collaborative efforts with Lipton and local partners, emphasizing the shared goal of fostering a sustainable, responsible, and prosperous future for all. "The mutual commitment to growth and sustainability is a promising sign for the tea industry," he said. Roos added, "By working together, we will raise tea quality globally and create value for all, including local farming communities and consumers," end quote. After enduring months of drought, Kenya's tea growers are swamped. East Africa, including Kenya, relies on a March to May long rainy season to rejuvenate tea plants after the winter dry spell. The Indian Ocean dipole, which leads to warmer ocean temperatures in the western Indian Ocean, causes the atmosphere to retain more moisture than usual. The surface temperatures in the eastern Indian Ocean are cooler than average this year, causing droughts in Indonesia and Australia. For 13 months in a row, surface temperatures in the world's oceans have been the warmest on record for each respective month of the year. Downpours brought relief last December when the short rains broke Kenya's most severe drought in modern times. This drought followed 5 consecutive seasons of poor rainfall between 2020 and 2023 in the Horn of Africa. Joyce Kimutai, a research associate at the Imperial College in London, told Voice of America that she and her colleagues from the World Weather Attribution, a group of scientists that analyze whether climate change has played a role in extreme weather, found that human-caused climate change had made last year's short rainy season in Kenya and other parts of eastern Africa up to 2 times more intense. In 2024, the expected long season rains arrived early with heavy downfall. Flash floods in Kenya killed 220 in March and displaced 200,000 people. 450 people have since perished due to floods, mudslides, and landslides impacting the spring harvest. Meteorologists predict the long rainy season will continue into June. Kimutai explains that recent rainfall and temperature readings indicate that the El Niño weather phenomena has had little influence on recent rainfall in East Africa. Heat is the concern elsewhere, with April continuing an 11-month string of record-breaking average temperatures. April temperatures were 1.49 degrees C above the 1990 to 2020 average. The European Union's Copernicus Climate Change Service, CS3, reports global average temperatures for the past 12 months from May 2023 to April 2024 have been 1.61 C above the 1850 to 1900 period. Bangladesh and South Korea experienced severe heat waves this spring, and extreme temperatures in Vietnam and Thailand killed at least 38 people. Business Insight. In last week's podcast, TMOIT founder Bose Katau, whose farm is located in the Nandi Hills in Kenya, said, quote, "In the Nandi Hills, we are all suffering from climate change. The weather patterns are becoming unpredictable with longer droughts when we don't expect droughts. As I'm speaking, Kenya has had crazy amounts of rainfall this week. This can be counterproductive with floods, mudslides, etc. So we are all living in a world of climate change, and I think tea can be a big contributor in reversing this," end quote. Conflicts involving Iran, Russia, and Pakistan, all major tea importers, have disrupted the timing of payments, the ease of currency conversions, and shipping to the point that traditional tea suppliers in Sri Lanka, India, Nepal, and East Africa are unwilling to accept the current high risk for little reward. While the headlines are focused on the Middle East and Ukraine, conflict on the border of Pakistan and Iran, two of the largest tea-consuming countries, has disrupted a once brisk tea trade, presenting obstacles that Indian and Sri Lankan exporters are struggling to surmount. The International Institute for Strategic Studies writes that Pakistan conducted strikes inside Iran, targeting separatist militants, after Iran attacked the bases of another group within Pakistani territory. Economic ties with Iran, while not huge, are important for Islamabad as it struggles to supply most of its western regions with critical commodities. Tea exporters have temporarily halted deliveries to Iran, Israel, and other Middle Eastern countries, observing that shipping routes will be forced to realign if tensions continue to rise. Consider that the world's reputable shipping companies currently refuse to deliver cargo to Iran, forcing the country to rely entirely on its state-owned fleet and questionable shipping ventures. This greatly limited the quantity of tea shipped from India, Africa, and Sri Lanka. India tea shipments destined for Iran declined from 54 million kilos in 2019 to around 5 million kilos in 2023. During the first quarter of 2024, Iran reported a 62% decline in tea imports. Kolkata-based Asian Tea Group CEO Mohit Agarwal said his first two shipments to Iran this year were successful. The next hurdle is settlements. Tea companies dealing with Iran complain that payments are frequently ensnared by banks contending with sanctions. Sri Lanka is bypassing U.S. sanctions by bartering for oil. Trade between Moscow, Turkey, and China plummeted during the first quarter as the U.S. targeted international banks that assisted the Russian Federation. The intent is to prevent Russia from acquiring essential products for its military, not food. But as a practical matter, many banks find that severing ties with Russia is easier than complicated and expensive currency transactions, given the strength of the U.S. dollar and the isolation of Russia's currency, the ruble. The Financial Times writes that the U.S. executive order implemented last year makes it much more difficult to circumvent sanctions, even if the transactions involve non-military goods. The publication quoted a Russian investor who said that, quote, "Within 6 months, you basically won't be able to do anything. The logical endpoint of this is turning Russia into Iran," end quote. Next, Arvinda Anantharaman in Bengaluru reports on this week's India Tea News.
India Tea News for the week ending 10th May 2024. India is seeing the need for food safety compliance for several of its exports and not just tea. The Deccan Herald carried a list of 400 products that failed to comply with heavy metal and pesticide residue. In Assam, the Bot Leaf Manufacturers Association issued a press release citing the non-availability of labs for testing green tea leaves and made teas in Assam as a cause for failure to adhere to FSSAI norms. The report added that with Assam producing 675 million kilos of made tea, of which the small tea growers contribute 52% or 351 million kilos, and virtually no facilities available for testing in Assam, it's nearly impossible to test the teas for residue. The association blamed the Tea Board for poor outreach, which has resulted in the suspension of registration of several bottling factories for failure to meet the food safety standards or FSSAI norms. They point out that the bottling factories do not add chemicals and the problem is at the small tea grower STG level, where greater awareness of regulation and training, the safe use of pesticide is needed. Further, they've said that green leaves cannot become compliant overnight, calling for a roadmap to transition from non-compliant to compliant green tea leaves. We also call for greater testing of orthodox tea. Also from Assam, weather impacts tea in Barak Valley. The Tea Association of India has estimated a 50% crop damage in Barak Valley due to heavy pre-monsoon showers and hailstorms. There's been heavy damage with leaf laceration and leaf fall. Saurabhindu Bhattacharji, who is the secretary of the Barak Valley chapter of the Tea Association of India, said that shade trees had been uprooted and there's been damage to electric lines and poles and roofs of homes and factories. This has resulted in interruptions in electric supply, which has led to estates depending on external power sources, which is further adding to the cost of production. The Met Department has predicted cyclonic circulation over Assam in the coming week with rain and thunderstorm warnings in isolated places.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hi, I'm Nish. I grew up in an organic tea farm and I founded Nepal Tea Collective in 2016. Tea is not just a beverage for me, but a catalyst for social change, sustainably empowering hardworking artisans like my parents for the past 30 years. I'm on a mission to make the whole world aware of the goodness of Nepali teas and the good that comes from supporting growers in this remarkable land. If you haven't tasted Nepali teas yet, you're missing out. Our award-winning teas are making headlines. Find out why. Visit Nepal Tea Collective's website to get a free sample of this extraordinary taste of the Himalayas. That's nepalteacollective.com. Or just send me an email at nish, N-I-S-H, at nepalteacollective.com. Cheers.
Twenty-five years ago, specialty tea was grown on fewer than 5 acres on the Big Island of Hawaii, a remnant of the thousands of acres cultivated on large estates that flourished at the turn of the century. Today, Hawaii produces more specialty tea than any state in the U.S., thanks to an enterprising U.S. Department of Agricultural researcher and horticulturalist, Dr. Francis Zee. Zee, who was 70, passed away on March 29th in Honolulu, Hawaii. He will be remembered Saturday at a memorial service attended by a close-knit cadre of tea growers inspired by his dedication and patient guidance. Joining us today is Tea Hawaii & Company grower and founding member of the Hawaii Tea Society, Eva Lee. She is one of more than 100 hobbyists and commercial growers inspired by Zee. In this segment, she pays tribute to the soft-spoken but direct-speaking Zee, a black belt in Kendo martial arts born in Hong Kong. In 2001, Zee explained to the Honolulu Star Bulletin how cultivating specialty tea could transform the local tea industry. Quote, "This is just the beginning," he said. "I believe many times these things start in the backyard. It has to become a hobby first," end quote, he said, highlighting the potential for growth and expansion of the local tea industry. Dr. Francis T.P. Zee retired as research leader and horticulturalist for the USDA ARS Pacific Basin Agricultural Research Center after realizing his vision of reviving the Hawaii tea industry. He received his doctorate in horticulture at the University of Hawaii at Manoa, where he began working with tea cultivars for commercial production. The failure of those attempting large-scale production led him to champion specialty tea grown in harmony with the unique terroir of Hawaii on high-altitude farms like that founded by Eva Lee and her husband, Chu Leong. Lee collaborated with Z at their Volcano Village farm to develop locally acclimated rootstock at her nursery, producing 25,000 saplings, primarily planted on Hawaii farms, but also in demand abroad. Eva reminisces about working with Z and describes how his vision continues to shape the future of Hawaii tea. It's my delight to introduce our listeners to Eva Lee, one of the foundation stones of Hawaii tea. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Aloha, Dan. Thanks for having me.
The USDA officials who funded Francis Z's experiments expected his work to revive tea on a big scale, but it was evident by the 1990s that would not happen. Hawaii growers suffered so many setbacks that producers like John Cross, who farmed 13 acres on the Big Island, were on the verge of tearing out their mature tea plants. Z was an environmentalist, tea lover, and talented horticulturalist who reimagined Hawaii as a community of small-scale growers who crafted specialty teas like those in his native China. You worked with him for nearly 25 years. Will you describe him and the significance of his work?
He was just extremely humble. So in the sense of everything that he did in his own personal studies, and then reaching out to community, of course, and, you know, going on and on, he wasn't one of these kinds of personalities that was very loud or large. He was just so focused, dedicated, and passionate about what he was doing, because he was headquartered on Hawaii Islands and stationed in Hilo. And we were up on the mountain on the summit of Kilauea, happened to be very, very fortunate in the timing of first getting to meet him and hear and read about what he had been researching. And so in the late 90s, you know, he was doing, you know, extensive research, really before anyone in the private sector, you know, really was able to understand what he was doing. It wasn't really all that known. It was just research scientists that were doing these studies that were within USDA, Pacific Basin Agricultural Research Center, as well as the University of Hawaii and the College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources, though. But those two institutions really joined in once he made it known as to what he was doing from USDA perspective. When he introduced, quote, his findings to the conventional farming community in Hawaii, and basically they all said no. They said it was too labor intensive, it was not economically viable, on and on and on.
That was a reasonable position to take because several companies had gone bankrupt. It wasn't just naysayers, it was people who said, look, we've seen a 9% increase in labor expenses. This isn't China. This isn't a place where we're going to get cheap labor.
And with that said, his enthusiasm was not met with understanding a new approach to, quote, reintroducing this specialty crop to Hawaii. When he initially reintroduced it to the conventional farming community, they were saying no for those reasons before they heard really what his findings were and what the approach might be, which is what you saw in the newspaper as to, well, our conventional farming community in the state of Hawaii is not going to take this on. So let's pause, let's take a look, and let's see how, if we can start this in community, if the community is interested in it being more of a home gardening approach, and that could it, quote, blossom and take off from there, because that was to be his, a different audience, so to speak, different students, different people of interest to bring this forward. And so the openness from that community to learn more, to take more risk, seemed much more doable in that those smaller pockets of community. And so hence, in some ways, he was also introducing it in a very traditional manner. So as we know that tea in other countries have the communities that are many individual farms that as a community will come together to create tea, to process, to grow it, to market it, a number of things that communities will do together. He also understood that it was very challenging in the West because the West is so individual thinking. With that, there was going to be some challenges. So what was left was curiosity, was individuals that didn't necessarily want to be driven by economic development, but by cultural and agricultural resources that might be able to contribute to our state. So a combination of approaches, who he talked to in community and who was receptive, and generally who was most receptive is a community of us that had no agricultural background. And so we were not bound by some of the traditions like fellow growers, tea growers in other countries that are bound by tradition. You must grow tea like this. You must process it like this. You must, you must, you must. Well, here we were given a situation where this scientist, Dr. Francis Zee, had done a lot of the research that was sort of this baseline data that we could then go from and create further. With that data that had shown us what was possible, what was doable to integrate into our life as it was previous to tea. And then slowly, with quote, beginner's mind, to every step of the way, we didn't have the elders saying it must be done this way. We're constantly experimenting, constantly trying to understand how best this plant works, serves, gives, expresses itself in all the various different environments here in Hawaii. And to do it in a very natural manner for its sustainability. And all those points being were somewhat encouraged by him. So not only did we receive this data, the science, the research, but through his, I was thinking about your one question about, learning from him and picking up on his nuance just inspired further development into the plant, into the product, into the various different ways that it is being grown and processed. So many of it was subtle, but with a foundation of solid information to go from. And so with that, beginnings, I think, was crucial. And that just takes a very particular gifted individual. You know, he had the science part. He had the appreciation of the arts. You know, he's originally from Hong Kong. And so he came from Hong Kong to Hawaii, someone that is not born and raised in Hawaii. And in some of that similarity that he and I share, I am not born and raised in Hawaii, but I came here many, many years ago. When you are getting involved in a very grounded community of its own tradition in agriculture, and yet you have not that upbringing, is how you find your way in the most respectful manner.
Tell us what it was like working with him.
Well, he was just, like I say, so humble, but at the same time, somewhat direct. So here he is with sort of that dual culture integration, you know, from where he's from, as well as his very science mind and culture locally. So being with him would almost be like being, in some ways, as being with a family member that happens to be very subtle in his gift of knowledge, so that it wasn't, it was received very easily. So in some ways, I was like the little kid at the door, just always bugging him, you know, and he was always very patient with me because he made it very desirable to be able to just sit and talk story with him. He was someone that understood the surrounding cultural arts that goes with tea history. I come from an arts background. Chu, my husband, comes from an arts background. He had said to me one day, it's you folks that are involved in the arts, that you have this tenacity to stay focused and create and have a drive of refining and understanding and learning and executing and developing and expression that will serve you well, will serve the plants well. So hanging out with him was just a blast.
Hawaii is just beginning its tea adventure in many ways. Let's look forward together.
There's so many possibilities in Hawaii that, you know, the discussion between small, medium, big ag activities. And, you know, there's always that camp of, oh, no, that's too big ag. That's too, you know, but there's something in between that I think that in a sense, for some, they look at it as big ag. But I think there are some great possibilities that can be incorporated with what is and how to bring it further forward in such a way that all parties involved would be most happy with. We just haven't, quote, found that yet. But if there is a corporation, as I have attempted in talking to here locally, that would find Hawaii of interest, I would love to sit down and talk. Most of the smallness of it is mostly individual farmers.
Right.
You know, that's okay. And the success of Continuum is due to taking many different activities within tea that will support a farmer. The teas that we produce, the different grades of teas, the different markets that those go into, we also have is agritourism. And so with that said, is that people come to us, have tours and tastings. It's all very custom and one-on-one. And it's, even though this is another source of revenue that supports our tea business, we're always learning from these people from different countries that are coming in. And the questions that they ask, the questions that people ask that know a lot about tea or they know nothing about tea, all those questions serve as another springboard to go from. And that I find very, very fascinating, the questions that people will share with us and how tea is related in their life. And so most of them are not growers. There's something in tea and the origin that seems to open up curiosity for people. So hence, they tend to just be much more open in their presence with you. And I think it's an opportunity. So one of the activities when people come, try teas, they allow themselves to be in a safe place that they feel to open up and express themselves.
Z's legacy will be long-lived, won't it?
We know the tea plant will outlive us all. And, Yeah. You know, the wonderment of knowing that we're planting in Hawaii, that these plants will outlive us all, and that in finding that the tea plants are doing a service within native rainforests, that if one was to let it go and to know that hundreds of years later, the tea plant can be brought back by that generation as a food crop, as well as a specialty tea, is so profound. So I often feel encouragement that at the moment we're first generation tea growers in Hawaii, and we look forward to next generations being able to reap and have the service of tea in however form that they find it. So the plant is sort of that miracle for all.
Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of Tea Biz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the Tea Biz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.